right after the Super Bowl, I want a bottle of champagne. I want to bust it open and just start spraying everyone with it. That sounded like I was an alcoholic. I'm not. But all the celebrations, there's alcohol involved. That's something that you dream of as a little kid, and that's something I still aspire for, and you know, that's what we're working for.
That was Bengals tight end CJ Uzama speaking on behalf of his Cincinnati Bengals, and also all eight teams still alive in the divisional round of these NFL playoffs, all eight of whom, by the way, are dreaming of destroying a locker room in Los Angeles. So today, as we look ahead to a weekend with Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady and on, we ask our old friend Mina Kimes to stop grinding tape for just a second so that she can sober up a nation that is absolutely drunk on football. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, January 21st. This is ESPN Daily.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hello, Mina.
Hey, Pablo.
I just want to start here by admitting something to you, if that's okay.
Okay.
I kind of miss the Cowboys.
Oh, man.
I do. I miss them.
Truly, truly revealing yourself to be a member of the sports media industrial complex.
Well, that, and also I miss them because they were responsible for like the one, I would say, great non-blowout game we had last weekend, right? I mean, they gave us the one upset we had. And I feel like entering last weekend, I at least had been sold this bill of goods about how Super Wildcard Weekend was going to be, like the regular season, the most unpredictable, chaotic one we've ever seen. And all we got really was San Francisco upsetting Dallas. And I'm just curious, like, big picture for you, how different do you expect this weekend to feel in contrast?
Well, in preparing for the divisional round and looking at the matchups, I had a really hard time picking all of them. That's reflected in the Vegas lines. So that all said, because I put that in the universe, I'm sure we're going to get four blowouts.
Yes, yes. Well, look, let's start with Niners-Packers, Mina, because I feel like that one has a good chance to be close if the regular season matchup we saw in week three is any indication. Because in that one, just to refresh people's memories here, we got one of the best endings we got all season, right? Jimmy Garoppolo rallied the Niners to take this lead with 37 seconds left to play.
Garoppolo back. Garoppolo throws over the middle. Caught by Kyle Juszczyk. He'll dive into the end zone! Touchdown!
Only to watch Aaron Rodgers, of course, make two absurd throws to his human binky, Davante Adams, which led to the game-winning field goal.
Here it is. Placement made. Kick to the uprights. And it is good! It is good! 51-yard walk-off field goal to win it for the Packers.
So when these two teams are going to meet again on Saturday in Green Bay, one of the enormous differences this time around, it seems like, is going to be Deebo Samuel. And I don't even know if we're calling him a wide receiver still, if there is a different classification we've officially switched to. What has changed with him as this season has gone on since week three? And what's that going to mean for this one?
Well, the designation I've been using is just unicorn because that feels appropriate. I think I've heard wide back. You know, football's all about
it. Feels like a little bit of a shade as well, body type wise, to be honest.
Listen, we had some big man touchdowns last week. But yeah, basically, that does actually, though, sum up how they're using him, which is essentially as a running back. And that is something that you're correct. It was not happening back when these teams played in week three. It was sort of born of necessity. The running backs on the San Francisco 49ers were injured, and Kyle Shanahan started using Deebo in the backfield. And it turns out he's not just possibly the best running back and wide receiver on their team, he might be the best running back in the NFL. And as you can imagine, having him back
there. That's crazy.
Yeah, having Kyle Juszczyk, their fullback, at times another running back, it's a nightmare for opposing defenses because they just never know what the hell is going on. They don't know who's blocking, who's running a sweep, who's carrying the football. All the plays look the same. It is absolutely terrifying, and it is a big part of why Deebo Samuel has emerged as one of the, you know, biggest weapons in the league. But I want to hit pause there and note, when these teams played, the Packers also looked pretty different from how they're going to look this coming weekend. You know, they're getting a ton of players back from injury, and not just random players, star players. Their left tackle, David Bakhtiari, could be playing. Jair Alexander did play back then, but he's coming back from injury. Russell Douglas has emerged for them in the secondary. Devondre Campbell's been excellent as well. It's Darius Smith could play. So it's
right, their linebacker, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just hard to predict which team got markedly better because we just haven't seen all of those Packers on the field.
And I guess the other big question whenever you talk about the Niners is always like the Jimmy Garoppolo temperature check. I mean, there is the emergence of Deebo. There is also seemingly the persistent inconsistency of Jimmy G. And he is simultaneously a guy that I've come to appreciate. Like, his teammates love the guy.
Yeah.
It feels like they really enjoy him in the locker room, but when you watch these games, it always feels like he's the guy who's about to derail the very meticulously crafted plans of Kyle Shanahan, as you just alluded to. So what do you make of where we are with Jimmy G right now and what the stakes are for him, as his whole future in San Francisco seemingly is always at stake?
Well, you used the word seemingly a bunch there. Probably there's nothing seemingly about it. Like this, like he throws interceptions that seemingly, well, now I just did it. Gosh. You infected me.
I have that effect, yeah.
He throws interceptions at the worst possible times. There is no seeming, no alleged, no apparent about it. It happens. But that said, he's also capable of stringing together very competent drives. He did in the wild card round against Cowboys until things fell apart and he started missing some throws. He did get hurt late in that game, which might have factored into some of his struggles later on. But the stakes are big, not just for this game, but also because, as you know, the San Francisco 49ers traded a ton of draft capital for their rookie quarterback, Trey Lance, to be the future of the organization. And most likely, Jimmy Garoppolo is not going to be a San Francisco 49er next year. Now, that might be harder to predict if he actually leads them to a Super Bowl. It's pretty hard to move on from a Super Bowl quarterback.
Yeah.
But this does feel like, you know, a continued audition for a different stage.
So the whole notion of moving on from a Super Bowl winning quarterback brings us to like the obvious Aaron Rodgers end of this equation.
Yes.
I mean, obviously the Niners have this defensive line that has made life difficult for the entire league. The Cowboys most recently experienced that sort of a trauma. How worried do you think Aaron Rodgers should be about that pass rush in this one?
I think he should be very worried. The Niners front has gotten better as the year has gone along and finished as, I think, the best standard rush, meaning their ability to get pressure with just sending four without blitzing, in the NFL. Nick Bosa did suffer a concussion in the last game, but when he went out, Pablo, they continued to pressure Dak Prescott on nearly 50% of his dropbacks, which is bananas given some of the names, the lack of star power on that defensive line. I mean, you've seen guys like Arden Key, who signed a one-year deal with them. Charles Omenihu, they traded like a six-rounder for, and nobody noticed.
These names all seem fake so far.
They're real names. Eric Armstead, who was a first-round draft pick on the inside, but they've all been fantastic for them, which is important because the secondary is not as strong. And it's also very important because as great as Aaron Rodgers has been this year, and he has been, you know, incredibly efficient and consistent and productive, his production does drop off a great deal when he's under pressure. He goes from the leader in the NFL in QBR when he's kept clean to 26. Now, he doesn't get pressured a lot because he gets rid of the ball so quickly. But if San Francisco can get home with four, this could be close.
Yeah, going from the best to the worst, or one of the worst on the field as a result of pressure. I mean, there are jokes here about how he's fallen in the estimation of like real life medical professionals in the same way. But I will leave that for another podcast. And I want to move
jokes
on.
Jokes or
Dita.
Jabs?
Well played. I want to move on to another team that is known for taking a lot of shots. Because when I watch the Rams and the Bucks, I mean, look, this is a team that is in Los Angeles going all in on the Super Bowl this year. They're going to Tampa to take on the defending champions. Both of these teams have everything at stake. But when we saw them play in September, the Rams won fairly handily, 34-24. Although maybe that score was even more generous than reality was to Tampa Bay. What has changed since then for both of these teams in this rematch?
Well, the Rams have added a couple of superstars, guys who have been superstars at various points in their career, in Odell Beckham Jr. and Von Miller. Now, they did lose Robert Woods, who was their number two wide receiver behind Cooper Kupp, and it was phenomenal. But OBJ has really come on for them, and certainly in the wild card round, he was fantastic. Von Miller's been really good as well, rushing the passer. Meanwhile, on the other side of the ball, the Bucs have lost some players. I mean, Antonio Brown didn't actually play the first time these teams met, but they no longer have Chris Godwin, as you know, and then they are battling some injuries. There's players coming back. Lavonte David came back. Shaq Barrett came back. But Tristan Wirfs, who is their star right tackle, did suffer a pretty significant injury in the wild card round, and that's something to monitor because Tom Brady gets the ball out quickly, but this Rams pass rush is terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, the Aaron Donald stuff here, like, I feel like I always ask the same question when I talk to people about Aaron Donald, which is, do we fully appreciate this guy enough?
Nope.
And yeah, how off are we with how good he actually is?
Oh my God. I mean, he's so good that he gets double teamed at insane rates. But ESPN, as you know, has a stat called pass rush win rate, which measures whether or not a pass rusher beats their block in 2.5 seconds or less. And then run stop win rate, which is similar. And they put out a chart, Seth Walder, our colleague, and it's a bunch of, you know, really, really good players in that upper right-hand quadrant. But Aaron Donald is so far in the distance to the upper right. He's like, yes. Pluto. It's bananas how good he is, how much gravity he creates just because of his presence on the field.
Yeah, so if you are Tom Brady here and Tristan Wirfs, let's presume that Tristan Wirfs is, I don't know, he's there, but he's not 100%. Yeah. I mean, how does this go for him? I mean, the version of Brady that we're going to get this week versus last week, how radical is that distinction going to be?
I think it'll actually look pretty similar to what we saw last week. So Tom Brady threw the ball in 2.17 seconds on average, which was the fastest time to throw in a playoff game since next-gen stats started tracking time to throw. So that's very, very quick.
Yep.
But, you know, it's still going to be challenging for him if Wirfs is out, because it's not just Aaron Donald on the defensive line. I mentioned Von Miller. Leonard Floyd also has been very good rushing the passer. And it's going to be a real challenge for him, especially without Chris Godwin, as I mentioned.
Right, right. And so if you're Matthew Stafford, then his counterpart here, he got his first career playoff win last week. That is a big step for a guy whose entire resume has been obviously soiled by playing for the Detroit Lions for a zillion years. But here, I mean, you mentioned that he has Odell Beckham Jr. and OBJ is obviously pretty productive at the moment. What is this going to look like for him and for Sean McVay, I guess even more pressingly, the guy who has always wanted Matthew Stafford and now seemingly he has him up against, you know, the greatest of all time?
Well, I think they hope it looks a little like last week, or it's anything close to how dominant the Rams offense looked last week. And Pablo, how balanced. I mean, what was amazing about Matthew Stafford's performance was how easy they made it look. He only had 17 passing attempts, which were the fewest he's ever had in a win. Not in the playoffs, ever in a win. The Rams' rushing attack looked fantastic. Cam Akers coming back from an Achilles tear looked like he had so much juice. It was wild, frankly, to see. But we should note, again, that was against an Arizona defense that struggled to defend the run. This Bucs defense has been one of the best units in the NFL, and they are getting guys back. So I imagine they're going to continue to try to run the ball and lean on play action and keep Stafford comfortable, but it's not going to be as simple as it was against the Cardinals.
Yeah, you gave us a mini profile of Aaron Donald a second ago. Matthew Stafford's facing Vita Vea. And I know his gravitational field is also formidable. Like,
yes.
What is that dude like in terms of what Stafford's nightmares may resemble?
So if Aaron Donald is Pluto on that chart. Vita Vea is Jupiter, I guess, is the biggest planet, I think. I've spent a lot of time since I built one of those little solar systems. The sun, I don't know. I mean, he feels like the sun on the field. He just is blazing light a la Jerry World, just beaming straight at the quarterback. No, the dude, he's incredible. He's just such a monster at, you know, plugging those gaps, pushing the pocket. He's disruptive. He makes life very, very, very difficult for interior offensive linemen. And he's not alone because, like, you know, as I mentioned, they do have Shaq Barrett, JPP, Joe Tryon, Shoyinka is their rookie edge rusher. This Bucs pass rush is very good. What I'll be curious to see, Pablo, is how often Todd Bowles, their defensive coordinator, who's very good as well and also very aggressive, has them blitzing, because Matthew Stafford has been extremely good against the blitz. In fact, in the last round, he went 7-for-8 for 148 yards, which is wild. And I think there's going to be some interesting decisions for Tampa in terms of how much they want to send extra rushers and risk getting punished by Stafford.
Yeah, my very excellent mom just served us noodles is all I remember from The Order of the Planets. You remember that one?
No, I've never heard that.
Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn. Yeah.
It's not that many planets.
How dare you? I needed that. I needed that acronym. Okay. After the break, we'll go from the acronym that is the NFC to the AFC.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Okay, so Mina, we're in the AFC now. It all starts on Saturday with the Bengals traveling to Tennessee to play the Titans, who are somehow actually the one seed in this conference. They had last week off. They now have Derrick Henry back. Derrick Henry, of course, the all-world running back, their workhorse, who seemed to be the entire offense and then broke his foot in October. And then the Titans seem to prove that they have other people on their team as well. So if he does suit up, as is being reported right now, we don't know how many snaps he's going to get. What is this team going to look like? Because I have no idea.
I don't know either, Pablo. I haven't seen him running. I'll do my best to try to tell you, though. Important thing to note is that, as you alluded to, the Titans actually did continue to run the ball pretty well without Derrick Henry. And my concern going into this game is if he's not entirely healthy, they still lean too much on him when I think they have a matchup advantage throwing the ball downfield. The Titans love taking shots off of play action, and Ryan Tannehill is extremely good at it. And they have a wide receiver in A.J. Brown on the receiving end of it, who the Bengals, who have struggled to defend play action all year, don't really have an answer for. So while I would love to see the king out there and his ability to generate yards after contact in the fourth quarter is unparalleled, I also think that the Titans can beat Cincinnati on offense through the air.
So when you just look at the Titans, Mina, and you explain to someone like why they became the one seed in the AFC, what is the obvious reason to you?
Well, Pablo, first, the offense the trio of Tannehill, Henry, and A.J. Brown, they're very good. Like, Ryan Tannehill has been a very good quarterback. A.J. Brown and Derrick Henry, they're not only really good, they're really unique in terms of their physicality. They're just very hard for opposing defenses to match up with. But what comes to mind for me, what's been so different this year, is the pass rush. Particularly, you know, they are able to get pressure without blitzing. Jeffrey Simmons has been extremely dominant for them on the inside. On the outside, they got Bud Dupree, who they added in the offseason, and Harold Landry. And then Denico Autry is a name to keep your eye on in this one, especially against a Bengals offensive line that has struggled at times, particularly on the right side. To me, the formula for Tennessee to pull off the win is getting pressure there.
Yeah, and the guy they're trying to pressure, of course, is Joe Burrow. And when the question of, like, why are the Bengals so good now comes up, it feels like that dude, like, I don't know, is there a number one overall pick in recent memory who more quickly justified that label than this dude?
Third and goal for Burrow. He throws it to the end zone. Touchdown! Burrow with the quick strike.
I mean, what Burrow has with his receivers around him, I mean, Mina, these wideouts, what are they going to be doing to the Titans' defense?
Terrorizing them would be, I think, the appropriate response. Jamar Chase has been terrorizing everyone of late. Yeah, everyone.
Burrow, with time, throws, complete, first down. Jamar Chase across the 40, 45, 50. Chase is up to the races, inside the 20, to the 10, and he is gone!
And I think what makes the Bengals' passing attack so hard to defend is, it's not just Chase. They're a group of skill players. They're almost like a basketball team. They've all got complementary skills. You got Chase and then, you know, T. Higgins, who's also really big and fast and can win contested catches. You've got Tyler Boyd underneath. C.J. Uzama has been so good for them at tight end. And then, of course, Joe Mixon at running back. And there's just so many places Joe Burrow can go with the ball. And he is not only a very effective and accurate distributor, he's a willing one. He will take risks. He will throw the ball down the field. F it, Jamar Chase up there somewhere, I believe was a quote. I might be bastardizing that, but you get the idea. So to me, yes. For the Bengals in this one, what I want to see from them is something we've seen lately but didn't see as much earlier in the year, which is aggression. I don't want Zach Taylor to lean too far into the run, especially against a Titans defense that, while the pass rush is very good, the secondary can absolutely be attacked.
So if the Bengals have this basketball team of wideouts, what does their defense have?
They have some stars, not like Jamar Chase, Joe Burrow level stars. But Trey Hendrickson, who they signed this offseason as an edge rusher from New Orleans, has been excellent for them. And he did suffer a concussion last week. He cleared protocol. When he went off the field in the wild card round, the Bengals' pressure just evaporated. So he is massive for them in this game, especially because they've had a bunch of injuries along the defensive line and the inside defensive tackle, which, as you can imagine, is not ideal facing this Titans rushing attack. And then on the back end, the guy who you want to keep your eye on, the heartbeat of this defense, is Jesse Bates, their safety, who was also spectacular in the wild card round. To me, you know, he is the one, when we talk about this Titans play action passing attack, and I mentioned that it's something that the Bengals might struggle with, Jesse Bates is the guy who I feel like is going to have to come up big for them if they want to stop Tennessee on that side of the ball.
So we're here at the back end of our show now, and I do feel, Mina, like we saved the best for last. I don't know if you'd object to that at all, because what Bills Chiefs is going to be, we always call some game, this is the real Super Bowl. I think that this is kind of that, right? I mean, this is a rematch of last year's AFC title game, which the Chiefs won. It's also a rematch of week 5 of this season. The Bills won that one 38-20. Just first, in terms of your level of visceral excitement here, how are you feeling about this game?
You've seen that gif of Milhouse sitting in front of the TV with, it's like air coming out of the TV, blowing him backwards. That's how I feel thinking about this game. Half of the audience is like, I don't know what the hell you're talking about, but look it up. Milhouse fireworks. Anyways, I am Milhouse, and the fireworks are Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, both of whom, I don't know if you've noticed, have been playing out of their minds lately.
Yeah, well, so the Josh Allen thing, Mina, how do you describe what he just did last week?
a religious experience. Better phrase would be a perfect game. He pitched a perfect game, complete game shutout. I mean, it was the highest QBR ever. He had more touchdowns than incompletions. He went 9 for 9 on passes over 10 yards, 16 for 16 outside the numbers. I mean, I could just keep going, Pablo, but he was flawless.
Allen back to throw, sets up deep, has all day long, takes a look into the end zone, looking for Sanders. He's got him! Touchdown, Buffalo!
He was flawless with his arm. He was flawless on the ground. And it was the performance of a lifetime. And I think if you're Kansas City, you have to just hope you get something other than the version of Josh Allen you saw, because I don't think they can stop. I don't think any defense can stop that Josh Allen.
And so I guess because this is what we must do here, if you were to compare him to what, I don't know, say Patrick Mahomes is looking like right now, because I feel like Chiefs fans are already like indignant about, wait a minute, we have that guy. What does that guy look like right now to you?
Well, he was also spectacular against Pittsburgh. It took him a second to get going, but he looked extremely comfortable, both patiently working his way up the field, which has been some of an issue at times during the season, especially, you know, towards the middle, but also attacking deep.
Well, now they're going to throw it long. The Chiefs want Tyreek Hill over the shoulder. Touchdown, Kansas City, and Mahomes is on fire.
Which is, I think, for Chiefs fans, extremely heartening to see, because that part of the game was missing for a while when defenses started playing those two high safety shells. He ended up throwing 2 touchdown passes off of vertical routes for the first time since 2020. And that's something he's going to have to do in this game against a Bills defense that is extremely well coached, extremely disciplined, and, as you know, had a lot of success against him during the regular season.
So if the vertical routes thing is a development for Mahomes this postseason, the Bills running game as a development for Buffalo, what do you make of that?
It's real. And it's quite a change from the beginning of the year when Buffalo, probably, they really just would not run the ball to the point where people were asking whether Brian Daboll was, I don't know, allergic to carries or something. And this was something that, by the way, dates back to the previous season, this unwillingness to run, because they didn't really have to. But Josh Allen was facing a lot of the same looks that I just talked about Patrick Mahomes getting, where, you know, it is more favorable to run the ball into light boxes. And it's something they've had a lot of success doing lately. Much of that is Josh Allen using his own legs, which is absolutely terrifying to opposing defenses, but also the Bills' rushing attack with Devin Singletary, who's kind of emerged as their lead back, has been much better as of late. Now, I want to add, so has the Chiefs' rushing attack. Jerick McKinnon was fantastic on the ground. The Chiefs' run blocking has been really good as well. So there's a lot of parallels between these two offenses, which is why everybody is so excited for this game.
So hold on, Vita. If you're Milhouse on your couch, taking in the rays of offense through your television screen, I feel like if you're playing defense here, it's really hard to not feel like Sideshow Bob stepping on a rake. Like, what are you supposed to do even, right? Like, is there a side defensively, a team that you put more trust in terms of finding a way to get one of these crucial stops that feels like is going to be more important than ever in this game?
Well, I think the Bills are a better defense. I also think they're built in a way that lends itself more to stopping a high-powered passing attack like Kansas City than the Chiefs. I'll get to in a second. You know, it's amazing how well the secondary has held up after losing their number one cornerback, Tre'Davious White. But Sean McDermott is a defensive coach. Leslie Frazier, his defensive coordinator, has been fantastic all year. They look extremely disciplined. You saw that against New England. I thought they had a really brilliant game plan to stop Mac Jones. And I trust their ability to game plan for Patrick Mahomes. That doesn't mean necessarily they're going to stop him, but I think that they have a good shot of doing so. The Chiefs, it's a little bit concerning because, you know, they play a lot of man coverage. They're a little more aggressive, and you just don't want to do those things against Josh Allen normally. But I will say this. When these teams met earlier in the season, they didn't have Chris Jones, who's the best player on the entire defense. They had not traded for Melvin Ingram, who has really improved their pass rush. And Daniel Sorensen, the much maligned defensive back, was starting for them back then, and his role has been diminished. So this is a very different unit as well, and I think they should be better than they were during the regular season.
And one question about just how these offenses actually are structured. The run-pass option is something, Mina, that you've talked about a lot. It's something that seemed to be very in vogue in recent years. How does that factor into this game and what you're seeing overall in terms of this playoff picture? And if you could explain actually what that even is for people who may be unfamiliar.
Yeah, so RPO is a word you're going to hear a lot during this game. You hear a lot during both Chiefs and Bills games. Both of these teams use them a lot. Both of these teams are very good at them. And it is exactly what it sounds like. So the offensive line is run blocking and it's set up like a run play. But the quarterback has the option to pull the ball and pass it depending on what he sees from the defense. So it makes life very difficult for linebackers, as you can imagine. And it is an important tool in both of these coaches' arsenals. So don't be surprised if you see a lot of it.
So all of which is to say then, like, how optimistic are you if you're a Chiefs fan?
Man, I think there's reason to believe they're better equipped to play this Buffalo team than they were then. I also think Josh Allen looks like he's been injected with super soldier serum. So I don't know. Here's what I'll say. If you get that version of Josh Allen, the guy we saw just play the Patriots twice, I think Buffalo wins. I think they have the better roster, top to bottom. And like I said, that version of Josh Allen is terrifying. But between those Patriots games, we did see Josh Allen turn the ball over a bunch against Atlanta. And he has been, I don't want to say inconsistent at times during the regular season, but it hasn't been all super soldier all the time. So for Kansas City, it's entirely possible that Allen does not throw another perfect game. And if that happens, I think because Patrick Mahomes' floor is so high, they should be able to win.
And, you know, it reminds me, there is no one more like Ned Flanders with his shirt off than this specific version of Josh Allen.
Stupid, sexy Josh Allen. People are listening at home who don't understand why I just said that. Go look it up.
Please go look it up. Oh, God. Mina Kimes, thank you for choosing some playoff picks on ESPN Daily.
Thanks, Pablo. Talk to you soon.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Ryan Nantel, Mike Philbrick, Andy Tennant, Eve Troh, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vail. Special thanks this week to Emma Erdbrink, Garrett Lang, Andres Soto, Christian Gardner, and Jackson Ogilo. I'll talk to you Monday.